Recording in progress.
Hello.
Have you got snow?
Nope. In the tropical paradise of Surbiton, we merely have rain.
First
That
news update
was
for the listeners. No snow for us.
no snow. You know how that's like a really, like British people get really excited about snow because we never really get it. And like everything shuts down. And like Americans, they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? We get snow all the time, but also we've seen your Christmas movies. Where's the snow? We're like, we know, we don't know either. It's in all our movies, but it never fucking snows.
Fake snow.
Fake snow on the Christmas
We
tree.
were going to do weather updates, weren't we? Traffic updates, that's what we were
Traffic
going to do.
updates. You got a traffic update? I got one.
Yeah.
My
How's your closed road going
is
on?
still closed. They were doing work and it looked like it was going well, and then they dug a really big hole. And then in the really big, I was like, all right, this is exciting. And then they put up like a house over the hole,
They find a dead body.
pretty much. And I was like, all right, this doesn't look like it's going anywhere. And the house is still on top of the hole. So there's no, you still can't drive down my road.
We had a series of road closures around my house, which meant that we were actually just trapped. They didn't think that through. You couldn't get out anywhere.
Oh, that seems problematic.
It was a bit awkward.
How did you just drive over things in your big car?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Just move. I just moved the roadworks out of the way.
Smart.
Yeah. Should we start?
Yes.
Go on then.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is James.
My name is Matt.
And this is the world-famous Emo Dad Podcast. Still going. I never know when I can start talking again, so I just kind of jump in.
It's finished.
Okay.
Wanted to, while I remember, take you back to last week when we were discussing festival headliners, and you know we mentioned how why weren't Linkin Park headlining Download, and you said they'll probably play a stadium, and then literally the next day they announced a Wembley Stadium gig with Spirit Box supporting.
Ooh,
It
Mystic Rico,
would have been better though if we'd
Mystic
released the
Rico. It would have
episode.
been better. Instead, it comes out and it makes us look like we literally bandwagoned on something that had already happened. But like we did record, and also we were a bit like me taken, and then they released a very really nice positive statement was why Spirit as why not Spirit Box, Spirit Token. It's a
Spirit
new
token.
band, Spirit Token. It's a female vessel playing, doing Sleep Token and Spirit Box songs.
Sleep box.
If anyone's looking to start a cover band, there's an idea for you. Just putting that one out there. Sleep Token, they were like, we want to promote new bands and give them headlining status and like usher in a new, support new talent stuff. And I was like, yeah, that's brilliant. I'm actually that's like the greatest reason ever, and I'm really proud of you guys.
Good answer. And but did they decide that after the fact?
I'm like everything in life, I'm sure it's just brilliant PR, but like it is good. It's still good. It's good. However you look at it, that's a good. These are good things.
They've done well. And what's going on with you?
What's going on with me in my world? I wrote a record and put that out on Spotify. We haven't really talked about this.
I've been purpose. I'm not ignoring this thing, fact.
I don't think we're ready to talk about it.
No,
I feel like it.
I'm ready to talk about it, but it
Oh.
hasn't like
Come
I
up,
can't
right?
I didn't want to just mention it in passing, which you just did.
No, we're not going to talk about it in this episode, but this is like a pre-trail, and we will talk about it. But if you go to your music streaming platform of choice and search Cursed Odyssey, two words, I've done some music and I've uploaded it. I'm not promoting it.
You just, yes, you are. You
It's
just did.
no, but I mean, I'm not like playing gigs. I'm not making music videos.
Any Kerrang posters?
I'm not doing Krang posters. I'm not doing t-shirts. I'm not doing nothing. What I did is I wrote a bunch of silly little songs, and as a little present to myself, I uploaded it so that I personally could listen to it on Spotify to make myself feel like I'd done something real. But we will talk about it because I think it'd be fun, and I am proud of my silly little songs. Once again, Cursed Odyssey on streaming platforms, and we will do a proper little thing about it. But I don't want to like derail us from keeping on target.
And that's exactly why I haven't brought it up yet, because it's
Yeah,
like
it's a derail.
I've been like itching to mention it, but it
Oh.
didn't really fit with late 90s Brit rock
No.
episode or the Japan deep dive.
No. Do you not feel like it? I mean, let's face it, it is pretty late 90s Brit rock.
Yeah, okay, fair.
But it was released in 2024. So it's all right. We'll just keep that one on the back burner. The
Give it a listen.
so give it a listen, everyone, and let it digest, and then we'll talk about it as a group once you've had time to digest it. Some of my favorite comments so far are he's very clever. That was a comment I received, and I
Is
thought
this
that's
from
good
people you
because
know or?
this is from people I know. My therapist insisted I send it to her. That's real. And her response was, it sounds like something that could be on the radio.
Oh, well, that's not bad.
I think that's positive.
That's
That's
good.
positive. My brother decided that three of them were emo songs.
Okay, well, that's also fine.
And what I'm not going to do is tell you which three he thinks are emo songs. Because I was like, what three are you talking about? And then he circled them, and I was like, oh, I wouldn't have picked them three. One of them's about a werewolf in medieval times. Didn't was quite surprised he thought that was an emo song. So,
So you're saying there's potentially six emo songs? Or four?
yeah. I don't think I thought any of them were emo, actually, but that's good. There's one. No, there's two. I think it's two. It's two, which are pretty emo. It's two pretty emo. It's two pretty emo.
Any guest vocalists?
There is the sound of a dial-up modem.
Okay. I'm
There
asking. I have
is.
actually listened, by the way. I'm asking for the pod.
There is a Korean child, excuse me, saying, "Let's go" in Korean. One point.
Did you get them in to
There's
record live in your
no,
room?
no, no, that was from a stock library. And there's a German man, say, who also says something like, Radista, do you let's go? Which always cheers me up.
When this is the last question, and then we will move on and come back to this another day. When you the Korean child,
Yeah.
did you search for Korean child saying whatever? Did you search for Korean child, or were you just did you search for child? What did you search for? How did that
Right.
happen?
I wanted like cheerleaders. I wanted the sound of cheerleaders saying, go team, or something like that, right?
You
That's what I
wanted Dallas
wanted.
Cowboys cheerleaders, and you
Yes.
got a Korean child.
Yeah, correct. Just before a breakdown, I wanted like a group of girls going, let's go, like
Do you
that.
mean
That's
a
what I
musical
wanted.
breakdown or a mental breakdown?
Well, if you've listened to the record, let's be honest, both. And what came up when I typed in let's go was the Korean child. And I listened to it and I was like, you know what? That's perfect. So
That'll
I
do.
just put it in.
Drag, drop.
Copyright free drag drop.
Amazing.
That's what I did. Because I don't want to overthink a single thing,
I like
and
it.
the record probably is healthier for that.
Good. So we will come back to that. Speaking of overthinking,
Yes, sir.
oh my God, what whose f stupid idea was this episode?
Yours.
Yeah, I know.
Mr. Matthew Buck.
Oh, it's been hard.
Have
Have you found it hard?
I found it hard? Yes. Yes. Because, all right. Tell you what. Do you want to play the shortest song on my record? And then we can go
Oh, we're
into
starting. Go
talking
off.
about like the thing that we were here that we were supposed to talk about.
Oh, on your record.
On my record, yeah. And then we'll use that as a segue.
I'm not promoting it. And then he's
Yeah,
talking about it for
well, it
20
seems
minutes and then wants me
weird
to play songs.
not to play like 30 seconds of it.
Right, let me see. Do we have permission to play this music?
I'll ask him. Can we play it? Yeah, we can
Did he say
play it.
yes?
He said yes, yeah.
Which one shall I play?
Just play 30 seconds of the first song. I think it's called Feelings.
You say, like, pretending that you don't know what it's called. I like it. Happy.
So there you go. You want to hear more of that? You can listen to the record. I also put in the sounds of a party into that song at three various points to make it seem like it wasn't just me sitting in my bedroom with an iPad. It's clever, isn't it? Clever.
Sounds like you were at a party with your iPad.
It was a party in my pants on my own. It's what it was, let's be honest.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well done. Okay, so what are we doing today?
So, the task we set ourselves,
And
gonna
then moaned
re or
about.
you set me that you so you set a task and then you moaned at me about it. The task, let me find the brief, because you resent it to me in annoyance.
Annoyance.
Found the original brief. Five unexpected albums that shaped the legends we are today.
And then I made that up, and then I proceeded to ask you questions as to what that actually meant.
Right. By unexpected, does that mean just equally avoiding Nirvana, Green Day, etc.? I appreciate I made these dumb rules up. Obviously, they get honorary mentions. There's then 45 texts of me whilst I was watching Alien Invaders, or whatever it's called.
Alien investigate
Alien
investigation alien.
Investigators. Stupidest fucking thing I've seen in my life. I really enjoyed it.
So good.
Yeah, and that's it. So basically, on this podcast, you and I have talked about a lot of albums we like and that were important to us, right? But they're
Facts.
pretty. There's not a lot of
Obvious.
surprises in there. Like, oh.
Oh, I listened to a Basket Case. Oh, really? Yeah, so did fucking everyone.
Oh, Never Mind was really important to me when I was 12. Oh, the first Rage Against the Machine album is good. Oh, Smash by The Offspring. Yo, that's a good. Taking Back Sunday's first record was like a bolt out of the blue. Yeah, we've done all that. Right.
Yeah, tick.
Pick completed. So what we thought we'd do, because we were enjoying listening to 90s things that we hadn't listened to for a long time, we were like, yeah, but what else? That was probably a bit bonkers, that or a bit. So the way that I summed it up back to you is that if somebody walked up to my record collection on in CD format and was like, Is this yours? That's probably the kind of record we're talking about, where they
Okay.
would be like surprised in a way that is, I mean, like most of mine don't really fall into that category, but like that's the idea, like something that you wouldn't perhaps expect we were really into or made a big difference to stuff that we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah, I think so for my ones, there's like they were albums which kind of were key momentum, what's the word? Momentous.
Momentous.
I was going to say
Momentous.
memento, momentous in like certain moments of my musical life.
Right.
And like all my albums, everyone would have heard of. I'm not going to suddenly say like, oh, the emo song jockeys from Minnesota and their album in 1989 that only sold 13 copies. I don't know what I'm saying, but they're all like actual things that would have probably, for a lot of people, would have been the same
Right, big
choices.
bands. They're big records. We, as you say, we're not talking about little obscure little things, probably. These are, I mean, I think four out of five of mine are probably gold slash platinum records.
Okay. Yeah, at least two three, maybe three of mine.
Yeah, there you go. Big things.
Ish. Big aura. And then so that yeah, the rule was we were gonna just not bother with like Nevermind and
Smash, Dookie.
Smash, Dookie, all that sort of stuff, because it's probably the same for most people.
Listening to the podcast. Something else, isn't it?
So who wants to go first? So we're gonna do like, how many have you got ready today?
I've got two, but one of them's like massive.
Okay. So I've got two as well. So we're gonna do two each today, and then next week we're gonna do the rest. Okay.
Right.
Do you want to go first?
Skunk Anansie are a
Oh.
British rock band.
So this is the reaction that we were looking for. Okay.
Right.
Oh.
Oh. Whose members include Skin, Cass, Ace, and Mark Richardson, who decided to use his God-given name.
And join Feeder.
Right. Skunk Anansie formed in 1994. Dispatched, excuse me, in 2001 and reformed in 2009. The name for Skunk Anansie is taken from Akan folktales of Anansie the Spider-Man of Ghana, with skunk added to make the name nastier.
Good reason.
Now, they released, they only formed in 94. And then released three records: Paranoid and Sunburnt 95, Stoosh 96, Postorgasmic Chill 99, smashed the world apart, and then broke up. It's a very quick, it's 6 years basically from formation to ducking out at the height of their fame, having closed as a headliner Glastonbury Festival.
They headline Glastonbury.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Wild, isn't it? Like this band are so much bigger than I think in Britain we realize.
I saw them, not to jump on your thing, but I saw them support Deftones in Lisbon once.
They are fucking massive in Europe.
That was a good time.
Italy, specifically, massive.
And why is that?
Don't know. People like them. Couldn't find out. I tried to look it up, couldn't figure it out. They just like them. I think the other interesting thing about the Skunk Anansie is that they have a fifth, there's a fifth guy
Yeah.
who's a songwriter, a man called Len Aaron, who is a composer of film scores and a songwriter for Skunk Anansie and Skin when she was a solo artist. He's written with Skin 8 top 40 singles and two, oh no, that includes some of her solo records. He's also done film scores, short films, he's done TV shows, and he wrote for artists from The Voice. And he lives in Malta now. So there you go. So I think it's
So,
really interesting when there's another, like, he's not a producer, he's just a songwriter.
and so
And
he's
it's
not
really,
in the band as such. He's just.
no, but he's been there since the start. Like, he started writing songs with them in 94, but he's never, like, wanted to be in the band.
Okay.
And I think that's cool. Like this idea that everyone who's a who's writes songs also has to be a performer. Like,
Yeah.
why, like,
Why?
can, like, why? And, like, everyone who's really good at performing has to also be able to write. No.
Well, I would say I would argue that's starting to change now.
Right. Right. Well, you've got like 14, 15 people writing all the pop songs.
Yep.
Right. So,
A
the
load of which are
album.
from Guildford, I discovered the other day.
Yeah, it's ACM. So, the ACM, Academy of Contemporary Music in Guildford, although it hasn't produced too many tier one pop stars, has produced an awful lot of songwriters.
It was like 15 Grammys or something they were up for.
Yeah, for songwriting. Wild, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although they have also produced one Ed Sheeran. So I suppose that sort of,
Does all right, doesn't it?
does all right. So the album must specifically. So, how, first of all, before I start, how do you feel about Skunk Anansie?
Skunk Anansie, I find them confusing for my own tastes.
Okay.
Like, I seen them live maybe four times, like, off the top of my head. Amazing.
Right, one of the, honestly, them
Unbelievable.
and Muse are probably the best two live acts to come out of the UK in the last 20 years.
Yeah, you can argue with that, but you struggle. Absolutely brilliant. On album, I wouldn't, they're not a go-to for me, but I can appreciate that they are good.
Right. They in 1995 and 6, they were a bit of a outlier. I think they've always been a bit of an outlier because they were around for the end of grunge and Britpop, because that's 94, 95. And then they were around over the birth of new metal. And you could definitely put some of their stuff from Post-Orgasmic Chill in that territory, but they never really sounded like any of that.
It doesn't really sound like anyone.
Right. Which is like a thing that a lot of people, more people, I think, should strive for that. But it is also slightly weird when you're like, okay, who are you going to tour with? Like, just sort of an outlier, right?
Yeah, it's good. I'm glad it went well for them because they would have been screwed otherwise.
Yeah, agree completely. So the album that really that I got fully into was Stoosh. This is the
Stoosh.
one, Stoosh. Do you know what Stoosh is?
Nope. Probably something
It
to do with drugs.
apparently, well, close. It's South London slang for posh.
Okay.
And they
Was
were
well,
so,
a lot of effing and jeffing on this album, isn't there?
yeah, it's there is effing a Jeff in every single song.
Yeah.
I mean, so, and some of the lyrics are just straight up filth, but we'll get onto that later. It's described in Wikipedia as significant work in the evolution of British rock. Bit big, it's a really good album. It's a perfect record in my view. Every song's a banger. It so in the mid 90s, Skunk Anansie come out. debuts Paranoid and Sunburnt, which is awesome. Like, you go and listen to that back. It's a fucking great record. The cultural climate was ripe with political unrest and social change. Because they are also very highly political band. A lot of politics in this band. Skunk Anansie, known for their fearless approach to music, channeled these influences into an album that was both confrontational and introspective. The evolution is deeper themes and a polished sound. Yeah, that's fair. So I think what we should do is I think we should play the first 45 to a minute of the opening track off the record.
Their first 45 songs.
Yeah, just for first track one, side one, please.
Tonight we discuss the phenomenon of hooliganism. Armed gangs of youths have taken to the streets.
All you know is a fine laddie culture, really.
Looting shops and abandoned
with shuffle expressions.
Shuffles and brass barge boys, Brussels.
It's pathetic.
A real change is a good change. Especially after the government has been in power for some time.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Mad cow disease. What I love Skunk Anansie start every record with like this kind of collage, like a sound collage of where they are in the world. And I love it. I miss when records did things like that.
And they do it on every
brought
album.
You in. Most I haven't had, to be honest with you, they've got six records. I'm not that familiar with three of them, but the first three do.
Okay.
And I think that's, and I think it's a really cool little thing. The producer of this record, G-G-G-Garth, fresh off.
G-G-Garth.
Yeah, fresh off Evil Empire, Rage Against the Machine. And I think
yeah,
that
he had a good
you
year.
Can, yeah, I mean, we did the first two Rage records. Yeah, I mean, nailed it, this lad. And I think with some of the guitar, like Ace is definitely still in that school of like lots of effects pedals and noodles and noises. And I think that there's definitely a link there. They recorded it in Great Linford Manor in Milton Keynes, which sounds like it might have been a punishment. I'm just looking at his. Is there anything interesting to say there? Not really. Recorded the record. When it was released, it did get commercial success. It got to number 9 on the UK album charts and number 91 on the Billboard 200. It eventually sold 1 million copies. Other notable albums from 1996 would be Odelay by Beck, Tragic Kingdom by No Doubt, and Load by Metallica. That's what we're talking about here. This record got in the 500 greatest rock metal albums of all time. They are in the very, they just sneaked onto the 500 most selling British artists of all time. And the singles were All I Want, Hedonism, and one more, but it's not listed here. I don't know what that is. Brazen. That's the other
Brazen.
One. Now then, artists influenced by Stoosh, they've got here. Evanescence is listed here. Yeah, that's what I thought too.
By Evanescence.
No, Evanescence was influenced by Skunk Anansie.
That makes more sense.
Surprised about that. I re-listened to this album today. Because it was like the foot, you know, I wrote down on my list and I was like, oh yeah, what's the, I better listen to it again. And like 9 to 10 of these songs made me cry.
Aww.
It's been a very emotional day for me. It's quite a lot. What have I written about it? Musically, the whole record has incredible warmth and clarity. That's what I think. Why Which song is it? Have I not written it down? Yes, I have. Can you play the opening of Lost Infidelity?
Of course I can. If I can find it. What? You mean infidelity?
That's what I mean. Why did I put Lost in front of it? Because that's in the song, that's the song lyrics. Honestly, kill me now. Like, just put me in a bag and throw me in the river. What? What are you talking about? The emotion between the word, the splitting lost in fidelity, that pause alone makes me want to end it all. What are you talking about? The emotion, the emotions. This, I mean, there's no, these lyrics, every song is just heartbreak, heartbreak and heartbreak. Lost infidelity, we've never said a word. So black and white, you see, all the lies we've heard. In my mind, nothing makes sense. I'm nothing you can't have. Cracked up to disagree, that's all we've ever had. You, only you, can't be the one. Just what?
Your conscience has been sold. In my face,
vibe.
there's no more joy.
Hey, it's that stop start drum beat because they were, it was a reggae band and a rock band that came together to make this band. And I think you can hear all that reggae influence in the bass and in some of the sort of stop start of the drums and things. And oh, it's so good, it's so good, it's so good. I've like pasted in this thing like all the lyrics I like, and it's about 8 pages.
Oh no, here we go.
I'm not gonna go all the way through it, all the way through it. I'm just gonna mention a couple of songs. I loved even when I was even when I was like so I would have been 15 when this came out, 15, 16. And like, I absolutely, firstly, they all look fucking cool. So cool. Go look up a picture of them. Fucking cool. Got skin with a like shaved head, and they're all wearing like baggy jeans, and they're in like a post-apocalyptic warehouse kind of situation. Fucking cool. And like singing songs from a female point of view that are absolutely raw, and I've got loads of lyrics in there about like periods and sex with women and all sorts of stuff. It's wild stuff, and like you didn't hear anything like that at the time. Amazing. There's a song about a boy who's bullied, just called "Picking on Me," and I was being bullied rotten when I was 15, so that made a lot of connection there. I really liked the final song, Glorious Pop Song, because the chorus is "You're still a fucker," which is sung so sweetly over this sort of beautiful bouncy Brit poppy song. And just, oh my God, there's a song called "We Love Your Apathy," or it's just called "Apathy." It's called "We Love Your Apathy." Apathy.
We love your apathy.
Oh my God, the lyrics. The sweeter the taste, I love it. Eating your gutted spine. What? What? All of your thoughts, I have them. Spitting them out, sublime. Stop it.
What did your 15-year-old self think about these lyrics?
Well, if anything, I was even more emotionally unstable than I am now. So I think I felt...
Just without the support.
Yeah, without the drugs. So I think I felt it very... I felt extremely viscerally. But the one that absolutely floored me today was hedonism. So can we have a little bit of that, please?
Yep. This is the big one, right?
I hope you're feeling happy now. I see you feel the pain. All it seems. I wonder what you're doing now. I wonder if you think of me at all. Do you still play the same moves now? Or are there special moves for someone else? I hope you're feeling happy now. Just because you
Cool, that brings back some memories.
Right. Couldn't move for that one. But it's just, it's a song about, like, hoping that you're the person that you've left is actually happy, because that's what they told you they'd be when they broke up with you. And then wondering if it actually worked for them. And just wondering what they're up to is... Just stab me through the chest and put my heart on the barbecue. That's how that one makes me feel.
Of course, this was a time before Instagram where you can see what they're up to now.
And this is one of the many reasons why I don't have a personal Instagram account. Because I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I don't want to know what any of them are doing. I don't want to know. I like the purity of just wondering in my little head and then going, actually, I don't want to know, and then moving on with my life. I don't want to look it up. I don't want to know if they've got kids. I don't want to know if they're, like, on holiday. I don't care. Like, I like the purity of it being in my brain.
Fair.
I know I've picked all the slow ones, but there are also some absolute smashing bangers on here. But that's it. That song, massive. That album, massive for me. Absolutely loved it. And nice. I think it, at the time, all else I was listening to was like extremely fast pop punk and hardcore, and then Bizkit. So I don't. For me, it was like a real.
We're too early for Limp Bizkit, aren't we?
What? When was Three de la Ville?
I want to say 98.
I was in 97. So Limp Bizkit hadn't happened yet. So I'm still just listening to pop punk. And it
You're
was like.
You're just sitting around waiting for Limp Bizkit to come into your life.
I'm waiting for Limp. Exactly that. I'm waiting for HMV to put the poster up. That's what we're waiting for. That's what.
We're all just sitting around waiting for Limp Bizkit. But we just didn't know it.
Yes. Yes, exactly that. I think also this was my gateway into ladies singing rock music, which we all know I'm a big fan of. And I think this is the inception of that situation.
See, it's interesting you say that, because this album never really clicked with me when it came out. And I'm wondering, I don't know, but I'm wondering, and I'm kind of putting the dots together, and I probably was like, oh no, it's like a woman singing, I'm not interested.
Right.
And I wonder, so I'm actually quite excited now to go and listen to this album as a whole, because I've never done it. I know all the singles and stuff, and like I said, I've seen them live and stuff. But I don't think I've ever actually sat down and listened to it start to end.
I'd
I
really,
think I'm ready.
yeah, I'd really recommend it. I think the other thing about it, going back to it, is the production is, and I've banged on about this a few times, but like it's so good because it hasn't got any of the tropes of that time period with like a lot of reverb on the drums and like other things. It feels like it could have come out last week. And that's a real testament to the writing, the parts, and the just the whole thing. Amazing.
Did you ever go to any of the they used to do a lot with ACM, Skunk Anansie.
Never been, always wanted to. And I loved Ace's guitar clinics he used to do in one of the guitar magazines. Used to do a lot of that. And I've watched a lot of his like guitar content on the internet. And if you watch his like if you watch you can find a Skunk Anansie live video from the last couple of years, his tone and stuff absolutely smashed it.
Yeah, so good. They used to do these like what did you just use the word? Like clinic type things.
Yeah.
And so my mate who was at ACM, he was like, "Oh, I can sneak you in to watch."
No
So
way.
I went to one, right? This is a funny story. I went to one and it was Skin and Mark Richardson were there, right? I
Right.
can't remember where it was, but I remember it being quite a big-ish room. And I remember sitting down, and my mate was like, we're just sort of sitting near the back, so no one notices that you're here, and shouldn't be. And so we sat down, and this was one of the scariest moments of my life. They started like the lecture. It's basically a lecture, right? And they're
Right.
like, "So I hope you guys have all been practicing because we're going to be picking people out the crowd to come and play with the band." And you imagine.
You must have been. Well, I think it's like knowing you, this either goes two ways. You're completely shitting it, or you're so keen to be chosen just so you can go up and make a prat yourself.
Was shitting it. I looked at my mate. I was like, "What the fuck? You didn't tell me this was a thing." And he was like, "Oh, I didn't realize I've not prepared either." But he was a singer, so he could have probably got away with it. But God, could you imagine? I was just sitting there for like an hour and a half with this fucking, as people were going up and playing these songs and thinking, fuck, if I get chosen, like, you at the back, come and play drums. So yeah, that was the thing that happened, which was quite funny. Thankfully, as you can probably guess, I didn't get chosen, thank God.
Yes.
But I was very worried for an hour and a half of my life.
Right.
So yeah, good times. And I'm excited to go and listen to that later.
Right. Can recommend.
I should hope so. Right, is it my turn?
Yeah.
All right, I've got two here. I've got to decide which one to start with. He says, like he hasn't already decided. James's microphone is flapping around all over the place.
Not flapping around, I'm here. I'm just rearranging my bits.
But before I do my one, do you want to? I don't know if you've got this as a potential list or just in your mind. A couple of albums which didn't make the cut, just to some honorary mentions.
Oh, God, you've definitely put more work into this than I have. Yeah, go on then.
Was asking you for some.
Oh. Wasn't listening. Honorary mentions that haven't made the cut. Super Unknown Soundgarden. But because I felt it was just a bit like expected. Anything on Fat Record Rec Records other than the one album I've chosen.
Oh, okay.
So there's one. There's what I got. I relegate myself to one punk rock record from the Fat Records of it all, Nitro Epitaph of it all.
I considered bending my own rules and having a Fat Record sampler.
Right, but then I think we've decided we're going to do an episode on Fat Record samplers, aren't we? So that'll come up later. I'm trying to think what else. It's difficult. I was thinking about doing Science by Incubus,
Yeah.
but then I thought, no, we've expected, innit?
Nice. All right. We'll come back to that.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll think of something in a minute.
A couple that didn't quite make the grade for me was Queen.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's fair.
And Deftones, obviously. And Symposium. Shout out to Symposium. They would have been on it, but I feel like we've done a lot of Symposium content, and no doubt we'll do lots more in the future. So, I've just literally changed my mind as to which one I'm going to start with. Do you remember an album called "Sailing Catamarans Is Every Nautical Captain's Ecstasy"?
Fucking what?
An album called "Sailing Catamarans Is Every Nautical Captain's Ecstasy." That's what the album is called. Do you remember this?
No, I don't, but there's a really good song called Sailing on the Cursed Odyssey album. I don't know if you've heard
No, this album, "Sailing Catamarans Is Every Nautical Captain's Ecstasy," is what I would like to speak about, and here's a little sample. You
I
decided it was too obvious.
no, I'm so I can't tell you how happy I am you've chosen this, but that is absolutely not what this stands for.
Yes, it is.
You're kidding. Oh my God, this fucking
Science.
band.
Science. "Sailing Catamarans Is Every Nautical Captain's Ecstasy." Not officially confirmed, but that's what they've frequently joked about that it's called, that it stands for.
Right.
Probably a load of nonsense. However, before I get into this, I would like to discuss a little bit very quickly about a interaction I had with ChatGPT
Did
So,
you? Okay.
I asked Mr. Chat for some interesting facts about Science by Incubus. And it gave me some facts. One of the facts was that it's DJ Kilmore's debut album as the DJ in Incubus. And I said, "Are you sure about that?" I said, "He wasn't on in Incubus at that time." And then straight away, Chat GPT said, "You're absolutely right. He did not debut on this. It was actually DJ Life." And said, "Thank you for pointing that out."
Whoa, good times.
I then went on to ask, who were the first rock bands to incorporate turntables into their sound? Because I did
Great
wonder
question.
if
Great
Incubus
question.
were potentially the first. And Mr. Chat GPT came back saying that a few rock artists started using turntables in the late 80s and early 90s.
Oh.
But
Well,
then
that.
said, even though they didn't have a full-time DJ, Faith No More experimented with samples and hip-hop influences Beastie Boys, originally a punk band, transitioned into hip hop but continued to infuse rock elements. Their use of DJ scratching and turntables on albums like License to Ill bridged the gap between rock and hip hop. I'll take that. Then they said Rage Against the Machine, but then instantly said, although they didn't use a DJ, that was what I asked you, chat, that Tom Morello's guitar effects were like scratching. They also mentioned Urban Dance Squad, who I've never even heard of,
No, me neither.
a Dutch band often cited as a precursor to nu metal.
Oh.
And then they mentioned Incubus and Korn in the same category. And I said, did Korn have a DJ question mark? I'm not sure they did. And they said, you're absolutely correct. Korn did not have a DJ.
Can you play us some of Urban, what was it called? Something
I
dance
can't even remember
squad.
now. Urban Dance Squad. Yes, I can find that. So anyway, my point of all that is, don't chat to Chat GPT about bloody alternative music.
It is interesting, isn't it? Because it's just a reminder that you've got to be a bit careful with old Chat GPT because it's not foolproof, and also like it, like don't ask it, like double check. Especially when it's giving you like plumbing tips.
But I just find it hilarious when you go, that's not right, and they go, oh yeah, that's not right, and then give you the right answer. It's like how the fuck have you
In
now known the
AI.
answer? Oh, I don't know. Anyway, Urban, what was it? Urban Dance Squad. Here we
I
go.
don't know, you told me.
That's
Mellow.
my style.
Surprise, surprise. So you rub your eyes. Never knew you to yes, so cool as eyes. Hit the a bike, then they'll be stupefied. Ducks categorize us as hard cries. That's a lie, we know why we're
Obsessed.
occupiers. The world's been
Absolutely obsessed with whatever that is.
Should we just have another one? Just
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, well into that.
Right, that's going immediately going on the list.
Anyway, back to Incubus and their album, Science. So why did I choose this album? I'll tell you why I chose this album. Thanks for asking. I So this was it. It came out. I very vividly remember being at like house parties, and a lot of my friends were into like Metallica and Green Day and Nirvana, and you know we've been there all before. And then suddenly someone walks in, and they're like, "Has anyone heard this?" And obviously they're holding like a CD, and you go, "No, what is this? Put it on." And when I heard these first few little bits of music, my little brain exploded. What is this? I don't know what I'm hearing. And I'm going to be honest, it's probably those scratches which hooked me in. I was like, stop the fucking bus.
I remember not being able to isolate in my tiny brain what instrument was producing what noise.
It just blew me away. It absolutely blew me away. And it was like nothing I'd ever heard before. And I'll be honest, like with my buddies, like the Metallica and those sort of bands. I was kind of almost forcing myself to like it,
Right.
you know, to
Yeah, I do.
maybe to fit in a little bit. But then when I heard this, I was like, I found my people.
Right. 'Cause like the out when it came out, there were comparisons to Roots, Bloody Roots by Sepultura.
Yeah.
And do you remember El Nino?
Yep.
With the kind of tribal stuff of it all. Dreadlocks, the fact that Brandon was banging a drum with his
Yep.
hands.
Yep. Bongo.
But it was a totally different beast because it was poppier and bare choruses, and it wasn't like, and like the energy of like a certain
Energy.
shade of green and
That's the word I was going to use. Energy.
yeah.
It was like, fucking inject this into my veins. I have woken up out of my stupor.
Right. And I don't think I'd processed just how close we were in age to these lads. Like they were
Yes,
in their
so
very early 20s when they did this, right?
they're in their early 20s. We were in our mid to late teens. I was in
Yeah.
my mid, you were in your late. Bleh.
We.
So they released it on September 9th, 1997, on Epic and Immortal Records, which, you know, there's a big deal. And they'd signed a 7-album deal with this record label.
Yeah, it's wild because they've only just finished it.
Yeah, exactly. And they've just taken on board full time DJ Life, also known as Gavin. who met them at a live show in Hollywood, where he approached them about incorporating his music into the band, claiming that it might add an interesting dimension to their sound. Well, I would say that he was correct. So having that kind of the scratching and the additional samples and the all the possibilities that having the DJ opened up, I think, was the thing that kind of enabled this band to catapult themselves into the mainstream. So, what can I tell you about the album? They did actually release a split with Friends of the Podcast Far, with the album, sorry, the song Glass on, which the Far album was recorded around the same time as this. And then they toured with Far, and on a promotional photo for 2001's Morning View, Mike Einzinger was seen wearing a hoodie of Far. I don't know why I've suddenly started talking about Far, but it's kind of relevant, I guess, because I was
But
also into them at the time.
it is worth remembering that when we took worth remembering, worth making the point that in this timeline, Far were going to be just as big as Incubus and all these other bands.
Yeah, they were all starting to kind of emerge together, weren't
Yeah.
they? So, Science, a lot of people consider Science to be the band's first album, their debut, even though they released Fungus Among Us previously and the EP Enjoy Incubus. And there were kind of elements of sort of samples and stuff on those EPs and albums, but not as a kind of full-time instrument. So that was kind of what they considered a massive opportunity and sonically. And then they also started using all these other instruments such as saxophone and didgeridoo and a djembe. I don't even
Drum.
know what that is.
It's a drum.
Oh, is that the drum? Bongo,
Yeah.
as I would call it. And as you will remember from seeing the band in those times, they would bring all these weird instruments out live and play them, which must have been a bloody nightmare for the sound man.
Yeah, facts.
I wanted to talk just quickly about the cover art because you will remember the picture of a man.
I really, it's their like path to sophistication was entirely ruined by the picture of that man's face. Because enjoying Incubus is just like a mess of silly kids being kids graphically, and they've got that face of that man, and he's got a name, hasn't he? He's called Hillicus or something, isn't he?
He is called Chuck.
Chuck, excuse me. Somebody in that band insisted on putting him on the front of Science, which has got like a really like slick like cover. And you look at it, and it is just like whoever the designer was who had to put that face on it must have been cursing them till the end of time, because it does not fit in any way, shape, or form.
It's like a, I'm sure you will remember, it's like a photo of a like a salt flat in the desert with the mountains in the background. The periodic table is kind of blended into the sky, and it all looks quite like clean and cool, and then there's a massive head in the middle of it.
So great.
And something I've never actually noticed before, because I don't pay that much attention, is they've also put a shadow on the floor of the head.
Yeah, I know. No, I know. So like whoever had to do it was like obviously really into like photo mirage, and he was like, oh, mirage? Sure, manipulation. And he was like, well, if the head's floating, it's gonna have a shadow, and the light's coming from over there where the moon is. So I reckon the shadow's got to go, and it's so funny to give it physical 3D presence when it's clearly a 2D object.
So the rumors are, and I'm going to say rumors because again, I don't know what's true these days, that it's actually Brandon Boyd's father,
Brilliant.
which kind of makes sense. It kind of looks a bit like him.
Right. And like his dad would have probably been like in his heyday in the 70s, so he probably would have had that haircut and that kind of moustache.
Moustache. Yeah, do you have any favorite songs from this album? Should we play a couple of little bangers?
Yeah, go
Certain
on.
Shade of Green is got to be up there, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Fate.
But things. Just noticed this song's got 20, almost 25 million plays.
As it should, like should be in the billions. What a song. Favorite Things is one of my favorite tracks. Some of my favorite tracks is Favorite Things. Favorites.
His voice is just unbelievable.
So good.
And then you have all this weird shit like this. Which could have absolutely ruined the whole thing, but it's all so good.
It's so good. And has a Hooperstank connection.
Yes, it does. So the Hooperstank connection, I was going to come on to that. Assuming we're talking about the same thing, I've lost my notes. So the weird the weird and wonderful final sort of bonus track
Oh no,
is...
I'm talking about Andy Gravity Love Song.
Oh, okay. Well, you can tell your story in a moment.
All right.
But the, you know, the weird bonus track at the end, which goes on for like
Yes.
15 minutes,
Yes.
has all sorts of weird shit going on. And I remember like falling asleep and then waking up like mid bonus track, thinking, what the fuck? Or do you remember with the bonus track stuff, like the last song would finish, and of course, you just assume the CD had ended. And then, like 10 minutes later, some weird like noises would start coming out of your CD player, scare the
Right.
shit out of you.
Correct.
This
Correct.
was one of the worst for that.
Yes, yeah, bad, isn't it? Yeah, it's
But anyway,
completely bonkers. Yeah.
that all that weird nonsense that goes on at the end there includes a sample from Hoobastank's 1997 demo, Muffins. Sorry, from the, yeah, the demo is called Muffins, and it includes a sample from the song Show Me Your Tits.
Nice. Nice. Extremely classy. Well done, lads.
What was your Hoobastank connection?
So, the guy who produced this record, Jim Wirt, WIRT, also did all of Hoobastank's records because
Facts.
He was like local lads. And we all know from the Hoobastank Promise episode we recorded that Hoobastank originally had a saxophonist in the band called Jeremy Wasser. Now, the sax solo on Anti-Gravity Love Song, that's Jeremy Wasser. And he's also got some other part, like whenever there's sax in the background or whatever, that's him.
I saw this earlier, I saw his name, but I didn't have time to double check that, but I assume almost to the point where I was just going to say that that was a fact without checking it.
No, that is true. But one of my other favorite song on the record that I got absolutely obsessed with later in my teens is Deep Inside, because it's just wild. It's got
So good.
every style. We will do all styles on this song. But the lyric is also quite funny because it's basically about being on drugs. But it takes you from 3 a.m. to 4 a.m. to 5 a.m. And everyone knows that 4 a.m. is the worst time to be awake. Nothing good ever happens at 4 a.m. If you're awake and you look at the clock and it's 4 a.m., go and find somewhere quiet to sit until 5 comes round. All of the worst things in the universe happen at 4 a.m. So, and in the song 4 a.m., like that's when it goes proper bananas metal. And it's so accurate to my life experience.
I enjoyed that a lot.
Thank you.
If that is the most emo dad fact thing you've ever said.
Thanks very much.
So there you go, Science by Incubus. Over to you.
Great. I'm aware of time, so I'm going to make my... We've only done two albums.
Shit. How much time do you have?
I have 18 minutes.
Okay, well, why don't you do one more, and then we'll just do the rest in another episode.
All right. And I think it'll be... All right, we'll see. Good. We'll see where we get to from...
Or we can do two quick ones.
I'm just going to start talking because time is moving. No Use for a Name was formed in 1986. No Use for a Name is one of those bands where the lads who started it left, but the name continued.
All of them?
Yeah. So all the original stars of the band were out. At one point, it was a six-piece. Sure. But Tony Sly doesn't join until way later on. And then eventually, other people quit. Things happen. They do a bunch of records that are terrible. And then they sign with Fat Mike and Fat Wreck Records in 1993. They then do a lot of touring, trying to figure stuff out, and then they release The Daily Grind. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Could you play? I've lost that bit of my notes. Of course. Why would I not? 1994, Daily Grind. Can you play 30 seconds of the opening track? It's Metallica. What's happening? When did Lars come in on drums? So there was definitely. So what? I don't know if people remember this about like the pop punk scene is that there's a huge chunk of it which is very heavily influenced by thrash. And sounds a lot like Metallica, like Slayer, that. Like those bands, and like that. And that is it. That's what we're talking about here. Is lads can't really sing, bolting riffs together. That's what they were doing. But I got a bit. Oh, great. We'll do that. And then I got a bit. Oh, good. Which goes down really well when you're playing in the corner of a skate park at 4 a.m., right? That does back to the 4 a.m. thing. It goes really well, really well in that situation. What they then do is they're then like, they make a record every year. What did we do? We made another record. There's Leche Con Carne, classic, in 1995. Let's have a bit of Justified Black Eye, which is on every single Fat Wreck sampler, I think. This was on every single one.
Which song?
Justified Black Eye.
Is that on the same album?
No, Leche Con Carne, 1995.
Oh,
next
sorry.
Album.
God, can't keep up. Justified Black Eye.
So this is that band playing those songs is who I had no use for a name for in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all right. And I stopped paying attention. Because I'm not really a thrash guy. It's not really my thing. But, you know, and then like, you know, Science is coming out and $3 Bill is coming out. And, you know, I'm getting all into, and then like fucking Get Up Kids comes out and I'm like, oh my god, this is all this great music, and I'm losing interest in the Fat Records band of it all. I'm losing interest. Whilst I've lost interest, they make a record in 1997 called Making Friends, which is when they get a new bass player and a new guitarist. New bass player is the lad who got kicked out of Face to Face, who's brilliant musically, really really great player, and the guitarist is Chris Schiffler, who would then go on to be in Foo Fighters. And they made two records. They made Making Friends in 1997, and in 1999 they made More Betterness. Now, I didn't engage with More Betterness in 1999. I think I engaged with it 3 or 4 years later, when all my emo mates were like, have you heard More Betterness? And I was like, no, that's a shitty punk band, isn't it? And they were like, May, you need to hear More Betterness. I was like, why? And they're like, it's basically an emo album with like a punk rock background. And that's bullshit. That is not what it is. But what it is incredible songwriting and brilliant playing. It's such a good record, and it's such a good, it's just like, it's almost like the lesson here is don't give up on a band. Because you never know where they're going to. Because in many respects, I would say their first many albums are them getting the right lineup and learning their craft. And then it all came together in More Betterness. And then the next couple after that are also incredible too. I did find an interview with Tony Sly from 1999 online. They basically talk about, I was going to go into it, but I don't want to go into it too much. Basically talks about loving the Beatles, proper songwriting, 60s, 70s harmonies. And he says, and basically what he talks about is many bands rely a lot on either punkness or heaviness, playing riffs and not actual songs, instead of breaking down the songs and realizing the melodic tendencies within. The last Lagwagon record was beyond that. And I have to say the same thing about Making Friends and More Betterness. So that's the interviewer. And then Tony says, this new one and Making Friends were definitely the first records for us that didn't concentrate on riffs. I tend to spend more time on the melodies now. It's probably because everything on Making Friends and the new one was written acoustically. A lot of them were slow acoustic songs first, and then we put a fast drum beat to it. I think that really comes through, and I think it also goes on to lead into his solo work, which is when he just gave up with the rest of the band and just carried on writing his songs acoustically. Can you please play Not Your Savior, the first song on More Betterness?
La diferencia debiera ser más amplia.
Ahí va Cuauhtémoc por el tercero. Para Luis, 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 gol.
So polished. Tony learned how to sing, and the rest of the band are just so good and so precise and simple with the lines and the writing. The scales drift together, things go up, things go down, harmonize perfectly, which is because you've got Chris Shiflett and you've got a bass player who really know what they're doing with melody and harmony, and all that really comes through. They have like a violin that jumps in and joins in on the lead lines. Every song is a story. It's so just well written. Everything about it's well written. It's not overproduced. There's nothing clever in it. That it's not a perfect album because it's got that stupid Fairy Tale in New York cover on it, which I would love to delete because it's just ruins the whole record in my view. But this song, Not Your Savior, has, if I was going to get, like, have you got, in all your tattoos, have you got, like a quote tattooed?
Yeah, I got one.
Right. You don't have to share if you don't want to.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. It's I'm Not Giving Up from Steps Ascending by Thursday.
Right. Incredible, incredible choice. If I don't have any tattoos, because I don't want to have any tattoos, but if I was going to get one, I would have, do you remember when life was so simple and permanent? And then I might also have, everyone's changed, everyone's cool, everyone sucks. That is the
you struggle to get that on your knuckles.
Yeah, I know, right? But like those lines absolutely slay me. That song's incredible. Chasing Rainbows is incredible. Lies Can't Pretend is the most beautiful, simple song that has got me through some very dark times, because it's a song about life is shit, but it's written from the perspective of somebody listening to somebody else's problems. And it's not judgy. It's not saying them to stop moaning or anything. It just says, You're hurt. I hear you. It sucks, but it will get better. And that, I think, is the message of the record. And it's exactly what I needed when I got into this record. And whenever it's one of the records when I forget about it and then I put it on and then I have to listen to it obsessively for like a month.
Starting today.
Yeah, started like last week actually, but yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, exactly that. And that's it. That's that I wanted to do quickly because we haven't got a lot of time. But that More Betterness, Desert Island disc, first on the list of all-time albums for Rico.
Nice. Love it. All right, mate. Well, as we've only now got 6 minutes left, we'll save the rest for another day.
Yeah. Nice. I think I talked about Skunk and Nancy too much. We'll have to do the flipping notices, won't we? I have to get my notice brain on.
Get your notice brain on. Let me find a little tune to enjoy while we do the notices. Let's do this. As we're in a bit of a rush.
The Mighty Emo Dad Podcast. Thanks you for listening to another killer episode. Follow us on Instagram and on any platform that produces the podcasts. Give us a rating. More than five? No. More than four, less than six. Actually, just give 5. 5 stars. 5 stars for the Emo Dad Podcast. Send us an email on the Dusty email account, emodadpodcast.gmail.com. And we will write to you back because we don't get emails. Buy a t-shirt. Drop us a little sweet treat in the tip jar because this stuff like costs us money. Are you the only emo in the village? If so, you can get on the Discord and meet some other friends and talk about the glory days and the future glory days. Follow the playlist because we can't have a radio show anymore, so we put like most of the tracks we play on there apart from when I suggest some really random shit that doesn't go on there. I'm forgetting something. What have I not mentioned? You never listen, do you?
I was too busy doing like boxing.
Yeah, it's fine. If I miss something, it probably doesn't matter.
Listen to another episode and find out.
Yeah, it's literally the same. I mean, we could pre-record it, but like, we don't do that.
Nah.
You get a live version. You get live. You get this shit. It's like, it's real. It's raw. It's how we're feeling in your face.
Get up in your face.
Thanks so much for listening. Can we go out with Lies Don't Pretend by
No Use
for a Name? I've
literally got my finger over the button.
All right. Love you. See you next time.
Goodbye now.
Go! Yes, go!